Hello and welcome back to Expanding Your Horizon. I'm your host, Rob Stoner. My guest today is my business partner, Vice President of Horizon Managed Services, Mike Sikolsky. Hey, Mike, welcome.
Hello.
So on today's episode, we're going to be talking about encryption. And that can be, it can be a buzzword. It can be something that not very many people truly understand. At least the average person doesn't understand. And so we want to approach it from more of a non-technical perspective and kind of wrap it all into how do we safeguard data? That's kind of the focus. So the title of this episode is going to be Safeguarding Your Data, a Non-Technical Guide to Encryption. So I'm going to play the role of just your average business owner that is like, I know I need technology in my business. I know I need to secure it and that I've got sensitive data of my clients, but I don't really... Technology is not my focus. So I'm Mr. Business Owner. Why should I encrypt my data, Mike?
Well, when it comes to encryption, there's really two reasons that you do it. The first one is maybe less obvious, and that's to protect your customers. I mean, at the end of the day, your business is there to serve your customers. Obviously, you're looking to make money and, you know, stuff like that, but that's not going to happen without your customers. So you want to take care of your customers. And part of that is looking out for their interests. You don't want to be responsible for their data getting out into the world and a identity theft happening from one of your customers. On top of that, the other big reason is to protect yourself. In today's day and age, liability is a huge word. And if you end up being responsible for data getting out there, there's huge liability implications, particularly if you're dealing with data from California or Europe. I know over in Europe, if you are responsible for a data breach and data gets out there, you can actually be sued by the people whose data got lost, as well as the government. They will come after you for fines and all different fun things that you don't want to be getting. Even to the point of, you know, if you have just, let's say you have some of your clients' data in a folder, and you leave the folder sitting on the seat of your car while you go into the grocery store, and you leave your doors unlocked. Somebody opens it up, takes the folder, runs off with it. That is enough for the government to come after you for a data breach.
Now, when you say come after, is that, I know we're talking European and the EU and versus the US here, but is it they can come after the business owner, then treat them or hold them personally liable, as well as just the business being liable for the breach? Is there a risk to the business owner?
It depends on how your business is set up, but generally speaking, if you're following good business practices and making sure that your books are proper and everything, they will sue the company, but usually won't make it to the person.
Okay.
Now, how many businesses actually do follow the proper practices to make sure that that's not going to happen?
Yeah, like make sure that the veil can't be pierced.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. In most businesses, I'd say there's probably more like a 50-50 chance of the liability making it down to the individual.
Sure, sure. And I believe you mentioned the state of California also has similar safeguards in place.
Yep. Is they're not as severe as Europe right now, but it might get there.
Would you say it's a fair characterization that California's what they're rolling out or have already implemented is more or less modeled after the EU and what they've rolled out with GDPR and all the regulations?
Yes, most definitely.
Okay. Now, when you mentioned that I should want to protect my clients and I need to secure their data, what constitutes data that should be secured? From your perspective?
Well, there's the obvious stuff, you know, like credit card numbers or social security numbers, things like that. But on top of that, there's also this huge bucket that these laws like GDPR define called personally identifiable information, which is to say just about anything that could be used to find or identify a particular person. It can be your full name, your address, phone numbers. Also included then that would be stuff like bank account numbers and the previous things that we talked about, you know, credit card numbers, things like that.
Email addresses. Yeah. So basically the
date of birth.
Like if you were to digitize the phone book, if any of our listeners actually remember what a phone book was, that would need to then be encrypted.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay. So we've talked about the data, the sensitive data, the obvious, the credit cards. We've talked about the not so obvious, what most of us would say, well, it's publicly available. Like people put it on Facebook and you can find the name, you can find their phone number. It was in the phone book, but that's now more sensitive. Why is that data, that PII or personally identifiable information, considered more sensitive in today's day and age when 20 years ago that was getting passed out for free in the yellow pages?
Well, part of it is because of some of the stuff that you've mentioned where this information is out there and available in public places. So if you have, let's say, just the address for somebody, chances are you could very likely be able to go online, find that address, find the person that lives at that address, and tie it back to a particular individual. You now know the name, you now know the address. Using that information, you may be able to then tie it back to, let's say, their actual Social Security number. You know, it all comes down to getting all the little tiny pieces of data and putting them together to come up with more pieces of data and more pieces of data until eventually you get to the point where you could walk into, say, a bank and open an account in that person's name. You have enough information.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. I was just listening to another podcast just last night where it was talking with someone who was committing identity fraud and stealing identities, opening up credit cards and bank accounts, and just burning through identities. And what he said was one of the things that he found is he was originally stealing identities of people that had DUIs. He'd be able to find their information through public record searches and of court appearances. But that as he's driving around, if he ever got pulled over and showed a fake ID with someone who had an active DUI warrant out, he would get arrested and it wasn't him. And so what he found is he went and said, who's someone that likely doesn't have an ID that lives off the technical grid, so to speak, but I can get their information. And he lived out in like in LA or in a city that had a large homeless population. He made up a survey, grabbed a polo shirt from Goodwill, made it look official, and then was paying them homeless people $20 to fill out a survey on homelessness in the city. And it was just their name, their most recent address that they had lived at before they went and were homeless, and some basic information about like where they were born, their age. And then he was able to go online, order birth certificates, marriage certificates, social security cards, then walk into DMVs, banks, and open accounts in their name. Between what I listened to last night and what you're saying, it's not that this data is now suddenly available to the public individually, but it's that the ease of which we can now as a society take one piece of data or pull on one thread and start to really see and gather all the interconnectedness that makes it so much easier and more accessible to perform these crimes is what makes that data now classified as sensitive and needing encryption and needing to be protected. Whereas maybe 20 years ago, yeah, you'd have the name, the phone number, the address all listed in a phone book, but to take that any further was a lot more manual effort, whereas now it can be done with a couple scripts in a couple seconds without any human interaction or intervention.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting you mentioned those surveys. One thing that always sticks out to me when I'm on social media is those little questionnaires that people will sometimes share around, where it's answer these questions about your life. And it always, those always bother me, because those people that go through and give the answers to that and then post that online, they're giving away answers to, you know, like the protect your bank account, answer these personal questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're taking the answers for that and just posting it right on social media for anybody to find.
And not only that, and forgive my ignorance going back a couple of years, but wasn't the Cambridge Analytica scandal with Facebook and data being exfiltrated similar, where it was spread by surveys, and then they were able to use that to reach into individual user profiles and gather more data about the individual? And it was an innocuous, innocent looking form, mm-hmm. or survey that allowed for this massive breach of data and this treasure trove of information being siphoned off.
Yep. Yeah, you have to be careful with what information you give out. You may see this little survey and, ooh, this will be fun. No. Be careful.
Those surveys or those questionnaires are no longer living and dying at the back of magazines anymore. There's a lot more going on behind the scenes than just filling it out and getting an answer or a result.
Yep.
That's terrifying. So I guess my question is, how do I encrypt my data? Is it as simple as finding the encrypt key on a keyboard and pressing that key and then poof, I'm magically safe?
If only it were that easy. No. It's not like the any key. There's two main methods of encryption. There's encryption, what we call encryption at rest, and encryption in transit. Now, encryption at rest is encrypting the data when it's not going anywhere. So the data is just sitting on your computer, it's on your hard drive, or it's up in the cloud, and it's just sitting there. But just sitting there, it needs to be encrypted, so that if somebody were to grab that file and run off with it, you're still protected because that data was encrypted.
Okay.
Then there's encryption in transit. Now, encryption in transit is a little more complicated. When you move data from one point to another, that data can be intercepted along the way. So it's very important that that data is encrypted as it moves from one point to another. That is encryption in transit. A good way to think about it is, let's say that you have a valuable treasure that you have sitting at your home in a safe. Sitting in that safe, that treasure is encrypted at rest. It's in a safe, it's protected. Now you want to take that treasure and you want to move it to a bank for safekeeping. Put it into their vault. Again, it will be encrypted at rest at the bank. But from your house to the bank, that's in transit. That treasure could be intercepted by somebody and stolen. So you go ahead and hire an armored truck to move your valuable from your house to the bank. That armored truck, that is your encryption in transit.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense of how you're storing it when it's just sitting and how you're securing it when you're moving it from one point to another.
The treasure out of the vault, decrypt it so that you can then send it in the armored car over to the bank, where they then take it out of the armored car, decrypt it, and then re-encrypt it again into their vault.
Okay. Now, let's dive in a little bit in ways of doing this, both at rest and in transit. One that comes to mind that I see every time I power up my laptop is BitLocker. Is that a form of encryption at rest or encryption in general?
That is a form of encryption at rest. it protects your data in the event of that, let's say your laptop is stolen.
Okay.
And the thieves break into the laptop, pull out the hard drive, and try to copy the data off of the hard drive. Once they plug that hard drive in, they won't be able to get the data off of it because the entire drive is encrypted with BitLocker. Now, you need to make sure then that your computer is password protected as well. Because if they have your password, or if you haven't password protected it, then they can still boot up the computer normally, get into it, and get your data out. BitLocker won't protect your data from a bad password or no password.
Okay. And the simplest way of implementing BitLocker encryption, the most basic of at-rest encryption, I'm going to say from this point, is to be using a newer system that can run Windows 10 or Windows 11 with the proper TPM chips that support BitLocker and encryption. Is there anything more technical in nature that needs to be done aside from just using modern architecture and letting it do what it's designed to do?
Yeah, only other thing is just turn it on.
It's that simple. Go to
your computer and tell it, I want to use BitLocker.
Well, hey, I think that's the if there's no other takeaway, if our listeners get nothing else from this call, it's as simple as making sure you turn on BitLocker on your modern computer. And if you're running a computer that can't run BitLocker, it's time to invest in an upgrade. They're not that expensive these days.
Oh, yeah. That's a no-nonsense, very simple solution that you can do to help protect your data.
Okay. What other types of, like, how do you protect individual bits of data or in the case of, like, applications, how do you protect data within an application when it's at rest?
So when it comes to individual bits of data, there's a couple different things that can be done. The most basic is your password-protected files. So like a zip file. Everybody by this point knows what a zip file is. When you create a zip file, you can password protect them. Just enter a password in when you go to zip up the files, and the data will be encrypted with that password. Then anytime you want to get the data out of those files, you'll need to provide that same password to decrypt the data and get it back out. There are also plenty of applications that have built-in encryption as well, like Excel has built-in password protection. You can password protect an entire file. You can password protect individual parts of a file even. Or if you have your data just sitting in, let's say, a simple Access database, an Access database can also be encrypted. There's a number of other applications out there that provide encryption. You just have to go looking for it. As far as if you use some off-the-shelf software or custom-developed software or using a database or anything like that, the big takeaway here is talk to your vendors. They're going to know if they support encryption, how you can turn it on, how you can make sure that it's secure.
Okay. So again, it's still, at least the at-rest part of encryption is still pretty easy and attainable for the average person. It's just password protecting files is encryption at rest.
Mm-hmm.
And then from a database or application standpoint, may or may not be supported by the application, and you need to talk to the vendor that supports that to make that determination. Okay.
And of course, you don't need to encrypt everything.
Right.
Just password protect your files that have that personally identifiable information in it.
Now, moving on, encryption in transit.
Yep.
How do we handle that?
Well, the good news is a lot of the encryption in transit that we deal with on a day-to-day basis is already handled for us. And that's through our web browsers. But you need to be careful with web browsers. Always make sure that you look up in the corner for that little lock icon next to the website that you're going to. That tells you that the web browser has encrypted the connection, and the other end has said, Let's say I'm your bank, and the web browser has checked that certification that came across that says I'm your bank and has verified, yep, they actually are who they say they are. On top of that, there's email that you need to worry about. If you're sending bank account numbers over email or anything like that, you need to make sure that that's encrypted. That can be done through Microsoft 365. Talk to your IT provider for that information, but in general, it can be done with a business premium license or the Azure Information Protection license.
And is that really the, then, like, if I, well, I've received a couple emails where you have to basically click here to be able to access the encrypted information, and then it sends you a separate link to be able to sign in and does some two-factor authentication. That's that type of encrypted email, where the email never actually makes it to my inbox unencrypted. It stays in its encrypted state in the cloud server, and I can view it and reply to it there, where they can control the message. Okay.
Yep, that's exactly what that is. And you want to use something like that anytime you send personally identifiable information over email.
Sure.
There's a number of other ways that you can do that over email. I know for smaller businesses that might not have Microsoft 365, or if you're doing like a sole proprietorship thing, Proton Mail will do email encryption that way, where the email stays encrypted in Proton Mail server, and they just send out a link with the email, a link to the email, and you click on the link again, log in, and retrieve the information. There's also plenty of free or low-cost alternatives out there, like ShareFile.
To be able to send secure files. Yep. The far end, keep those. Okay.
But even text messages, you need to worry about it there too. You don't often think about it, but text messages can be intercepted, just like email or anything else. Now, the people that live in Apple, they don't have to worry about that. As long as you're doing text messages from one Apple user to another Apple user through iMessage, the messages are automatically encrypted for you. Outside of that, if you're not living within the Apple universe, there is a text messaging platform out there called Signal. And it works just like any other text messaging app, but all of the messages sent through it are encrypted end-to-end, meaning they get encrypted when you send the message, it gets to the other end, and then at the other end is where it gets decrypted.
Okay. Interesting. I guess I mean, I've heard stories of needing, like, or that vendors are adding encryption to text messaging, but I never really thought about needing to worry about it, but it makes sense. I mean, text messages aren't necessarily something that every business does.
Yep.
But think about the information. I just think about what I send back and forth with my friends and family. And it's very personal information. And I'm absolutely guilty of having sent an SSN over a text message to my wife when we're trying to fill out a form or something like that. And yeah, it makes sense that you would need to protect that, that information.
Yep.
What about cloud applications? Is there a way that we can encrypt SaaS applications or cloud apps when we're using them?
So cloud applications are kind of a weird area because you're accessing it through usually a web client, a web browser. So the encryption in transit is usually taken care of for you, as long as you, again, make sure that little lock icon's there. But encryption at rest is where that can get a little messy, because not every vendor is going to do encryption at rest for you. You're going to need to talk to the individual vendors that supply your cloud applications again and make sure that they're encrypting the data on their end after they get it.
So again, when it comes to applications and databases, whether it's at rest or in transit, talk to your vendor and find out what they support, and go from there.
Yep.
I mean, it sounds like, I mean, at a high level anyways, the basics of implementing encryption to protect the business, protect the clients, it's not that difficult of a hurdle to overcome. I mean, it's
not really a huge burden. A lot of times people will think, oh, encryption is this huge complicated thing, I don't have to deal with it. But you really only need to do one or two simple little things to get like 99% of the way there.
And I think the complication adds in is databases and applications and encrypting there. And if you're like the more common typical small business these days that's mostly using a couple cloud applications to run their business rather than having built custom internal apps that are running on your own server, and talking to your own databases, it's open up a support ticket, look at the feature literature, and find out. In most cases, you're going to find these cloud applications, they're already doing a lot of encryption. It may not be encrypting everything, or it may be encrypting everything, but it may not be what you would necessarily design. But typically those cloud application businesses, they're having to work across borders, across country borders with different frameworks for privacy and data protection. So they're going to already have a framework in place and an approved method for the like how they approach encrypting data and securing client data. Yep. And so I think it's the legacy apps that are going to be more difficult for businesses to adjust and deal with. But for the typical small business, talk to the vendor, document it. And then if you were to ever have a compromise, encryption isn't necessarily like, it's not going to stop a compromise from happening. But like some of the other times we chat, it's about how do you prevent an attacker from gaining access or exfiltrating data? But the way I see encryption is it's about, let's assume they're going to get in, assume they're going to take data. How can we ensure or minimize the impact resulting from that data once it's left our environment? The data is encrypted after it's been exfiltrated. Well, yes, you have to report that there was a data breach. Someone got this data, but it's unlikely that they're ever going to actually access the unencrypted data inside of it. But if you didn't encrypt any of your data, any of your client files, their bank accounts or credit card information, they pull that, you're about to have a world of hurt and a world of lawsuits coming your way from a data breach that resulted in personally identifiable information being leaked, being sold online, being you basically facilitating a bunch of identity theft at that point.
Yep. Yeah, and as long as you can provide verification that the data was encrypted before it was breached, then that severely limits your liability. And unfortunately, it's not a case of if you're going to get breached, it's really a case of when.
Yeah.
So you need to make sure that you're protected and when it happens.
And I think as these last couple of years, as we've been making changes internally, as we've been focusing more and more on an educational approach to working with our clients, it's like what we do here at Horizon is becoming less and less about actually turning the wrench to keep the computers going, mm-hmm. and more about reducing the risk to the business from the risk and liability from a data perspective, and taking more of that, assume that the breach is going to happen. How do we minimize the impact stemming from that breach and keep the business operating?
Yeah, in the event of that, wrench turning that you're talking about and doing the patches and everything, that, sure, it helps keep the lights on, but at the end of the day, what it's really for is so that when a breach happens, they get in and they're contained to that one particular spot that they breached. they can't easily jump from that spot to another, and then another, and another, and another, because everything else has been properly patched and maintained. Again, minimizing the risk.
Yeah. So I want to thank you for taking the time today. I think this has been a very good conversation. Hopefully, our listeners got some simple takeaways. It's encryption isn't that challenging to be able to solve the 99% of the trouble that you're going to have. And hopefully, this opened your eyes.
Turn on your BitLocker. When you're using your web browser, make sure you check for the little lock icon in the corner. And anytime you're taking files, putting them onto a thumb drive or USB key, make the files password protected first. Those three things will get you 99% of the way there.